Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and the Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. You know, they have the wide format Instax cameras. I've been talking about this stuff. It is so cool. It's really fun photography. Check it out. The Instax cameras are in the country. There's film. It's great stuff. You got to check it out. FujifilmUSA.com/professional, making life more colorful. And of course, C41 color neg, black and white, chrome. They got it all happening. Definitely check them out. Our friends over at Richard Photo Lab, RichardPhotoLab.com. DR5, the place to send your black and white to get black and white chrome. That's it. It's great stuff. Check them out. DR5.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios, the place to have all of your film scanned for your digital hybrid workflow. Definitely cool stuff. Aztec Premier Drum Scanner. You will not find a better scan anywhere on this planet. You can check them out over at www.igerstudios. That's E-I-G-E-R-S-T-U-D-I-O-S. IgerStudios.com. Great stuff going on with Lenny and the guys over at Iger. Good stuff. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. A camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder. Our media partners at the Analog Photography User Group over at www.apug.org, the place on the web for all things analog photographic process. We got a great show today. We're going to have with us John Paul Caponegro. John Paul is going to join us to talk about galleries, exhibiting your work, getting your work into galleries, the acceptance of a hybrid digital workflow, what's being thought of with galleries and collectors about printing your prints on an inkjet or other types of alternate materials. We're going to talk to John Paul about a lot of great stuff today. John Paul, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. I wanted to talk to you today, JP, about printing and galleries. Most of our listeners on Inside Analog Photo are doing analog capture like your father's doing. I know that you shot film for many years, and basically I think for the most part, unless you're printing silver gelatin, most people are on this hybrid workflow where they're scanning their input, or even if they're shooting digital, it doesn't matter. Once you're digital, you're digital. So let's talk about inkjet versus silver. And you have a vast knowledge in this area. You do, I think, the best workshops in the country with yourself and Mac Hulbert. You've been doing a lot of stuff with Epson. I mean, you know this stuff better than anybody. So consequently, I think you have the insight to tell people some of these topics that we're going to chat about today and what your thoughts are on this stuff.
And I'm happy to share my perspective, so however helpful I can be, great.
To start off with, let's talk about your helpful website. You have a huge website. You got lots of great knowledge there. You have a lot of things that people can read up about. Tell me about John Paul's website.
John Paul's website has got tons of content on there. Almost 50 interviews with other photographers, over 100 downloadable PDFs, test files, all kinds of things. We send out a newsletter monthly. It's free. You can just sign up, and that will get you access to a lot of those free resources. And then, of course, there's the blog, which gives more episodic or timely content in addition to that. So it's just jam-packed with information about my workshops, my DVDs, my prints, the whole nine yards.
No, there's great stuff there. And then tell me about your workshop stuff. Tell me about what's going on here coming up in the future. Do you have anything going on later on here in June? Anything in July this winter coming up? I know you've been doing some great stuff with Mac Hulbert and stuff at Brooks and Hallmark. What's going on with that kind of gig?
Well, basically running one workshop a month. In a couple of days, we're doing a field workshop, and those field workshops are also extending. I'm doing that one here in Maine. Print workshop in July. Some of the more advanced printmaking workshops here right in my studio. August is Iceland. In the beginning of September, Mac Hulbert and I are going to be out at Brooks, and we'll also follow that up at the end of October. In mid-October, I'll be taking people out in the field into fall foliage around the Maine coast when the color is fantastic up here. And then in December, two printmaking workshops here again in my studio. So a lot going on there. You can find all about it on my website.
This is good. So, JP, let's talk about people that are collecting fine art prints. You have, of course, a beautiful collection of your fine artwork. You, of course, have dealt with people for years that have been collecting your father's artwork. And I know that you make all of your stuff now. I believe everything is all inkjet-based, all Epson printed. What's your thoughts on the acceptance of people collecting prints that are inkjet-based? What are you getting feedback-wise? Do people care anymore if the stuff's a traditional photographic print, or are they just looking for the artwork and the author and so forth and so on?
Well, luckily, the day when inkjet is accepted has arrived. It arrived several years ago when major collections like the Modern Art, both in L.A. and New York, collect inkjet. Then the writing's on the wall. There are still some collectors who are prejudiced. Those are the ones that I usually take issue with. But there are also some collectors who just really prefer analog print materials. They're used to looking at platinum and silver, and they really love it, and they have a bias towards that and a prejudice against the new. And those are still very much in demand. So I think there's wide acceptance for most of the media. There's a little bit of uncertainty about brand new substrates or brand new media. It just takes a little while for that to settle out. But inkjet's been around and proven itself so that it is now highly collectible. Nice, because I think that we're now looking more at content and a little less at media first. I'm not saying that media isn't important, but the shift in concerns is something that I've been waiting for ever since I got into this mix.
What have you seen from galleries? You have your work displayed right now. You have your own gallery. Your work has been in many galleries. You've dealt with a lot of art buyers. I've seen your presentation case that you send out to gallery owners and art buyers and art directors. What have you seen feedback-wise with what you're creating and how this stuff is done on natural paper? I know that you like fibers. I mean, all this stuff matters, I think, when you're making your print. Do you find that people are accepting this stuff pretty well?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a lot of crossover between photographic collectors and collectors of other printmaking materials like serigraphy or lithography or etching and painting even. So distinctions between the different genres has blurred a little bit, and there are a lot more people taking an interest in photography as a result.
Wow, and you think that because of this newfound ease, I guess, and I don't know if I would say ease of manufacturing or ease of technology, that you think that more people are getting into doing edition prints, more trying to submit more things to gallery and doing fine art because of this digital hybrid workflow?
Well, more people are producing their own color prints than ever before at any other time in history. That's a stat that comes from Henry Wilhelm. So you're definitely seeing artists being able to make different types of images on a wider variety of substrate than ever before at a wider range of scales. I've got a printer in my studio that I can make 60-inch wide prints. There's amazing possibilities there. So there are more people getting involved in that.
Well, exactly, because you're talking about, what, the 11880 Epson?
Yes.
So basically, for around 10 grand, you can have this wonderful piece of equipment that can do just monster huge prints.
With some of the blackest blacks on the planet, some of the most saturated colors, again, on the planet, on all kinds of substrates, from textured watercolor to super glossy synthetic materials. Incredibly versatile.
So you think with the 11880, you can duplicate what you could have traditionally done in like a Cevachrome, do this now on a high-gloss material, and turn out something that's actually probably better?
In many respects, because of the digital control over the information you send to the printer, like contrast masking. It's a snap.
John Paul, what's the learning curve? Let's say I go buy myself a new Epson. I buy, let's say, a 7990, 11880, even a 24, whatever, the newest little 13-inch printer. What is a learning curve in Photoshop to be able to turn out a quality digital print? What am I going to have to learn? Where do I even learn this stuff? I know I can go to your workshop and learn stuff. I want to go spend a week. I think you guys go over stuff from start to finish, but how does someone even get involved in doing this type of digital output?
Let's break that down even further. There's kind of a learning curve getting used to the printer and getting color management set up properly. And there's a lot of information out there, perhaps too much. If you get at the core and keep it simple, which is what I try and do on my DVDs for color management, and learn how to navigate the driver for the printers, it comes down to selecting the right materials and the printer that you want to print with. That aspect is very easy to get under control if you're focused and you get high-quality information as to how to go about it. Once you get into the Photoshop, let's call Camera Raw and Lightroom as well, it depends on how far you want to go. A lot of photographers who are working largely in camera have found their needs well satisfied with Lightroom and don't need to go into the more complex Photoshop interface. And that can be learned relatively quickly. There are a lot of good resources out there. Many books, Scott Kelby's book, Seth Resnick's book, and his workshops. The D65 workflow workshops are excellent for all of that, and that takes usually 3-4 days. Once you start getting into Photoshop, it gets a little bit more complex, and it depends on how far you want to go. You can satisfy all those same needs, but with greater precision. And then if you end up doing things like I do, which are often highly altered and composited, that gets a little complex down the line. That's a little bit more investment in your knowledge base to accomplish those things very well. So it's really a gradient in terms of how much you want to accomplish and the kind of work that you want to accomplish. But I can't emphasize more, there are streamlined ways of getting after high-quality information to get high-quality results very quickly. And you can then decide to go for that extra precision or the extra features on a need basis.
So let's talk about this. And I'm not, like I said, trying to make a big commercial here for JP, but I know that you have created some content with Acme and some other stuff. Does any of this content that you guys have created deal with these topics of getting up to speed with color management or digital printing?
That's what my DVDs and workshops are all about. And hopefully they try and make high-quality, sophisticated information very digestible and easy to implement. The six simple steps to good color management take you right through color management from start to finish pretty quickly. And I even followed up with another DVD called The Art of Proofing, where you get that last 10% that will help you make really great prints. There are other aspects that I cover in the DVDs and workshops. There's more information to get there. But that'll get you started with what you need to know in terms of color management and printing very, very quickly. And you can find similar content in 300-400-page books that can often be useful. Bruce Fraser's is the definitive one. Andrew Rodney has written a great book about it. But I really would start with the simple stuff first and then terrific information on a need basis.
Yeah, that's why the DVD works. I mean, you can sit down and watch the stuff in an hour. You got a pretty good grasp of, okay, well, let's do this. And the thing is, too, to learn this type of technology is better up front than wasting a set of ink. You're going to save more money by not wasting the ink and paper and then just learning some stuff up front.
Yeah, absolutely. And in part in investing in good tools. The new smart monitors like the NEC Smart Monitor really are much better and finally affordable. They're a $900 monitor, but it's worth the investment. Some of the newer printers with the new ink sets, like the Ultrachrome ink sets from Epson, really do deliver blacker blacks and better neutrality and gray balance. So a little bit of investment in the right gear will help a great deal. Everybody should be using an X-Rite colorimeter to make sure that they calibrate their monitor properly. Very easy to use. You really can set this stuff up with the right gear. You can set this stuff up in, let me say, 3 hours. Really, if you know what you're doing, you can set it up in an hour. And then you start making decisions based on your images and how they look on particular materials. And that's where the fun really starts.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that people can learn from some of the stuff you're doing, taking a workshop or just reading somebody's book or looking somewhere, is what an image looks like on screen is going to look different when you print it. And there's a certain way of adjusting things like sharpening, output sharpening, mid-level contrast adjustments and so forth that are going to make these prints that you make on an inkjet very palatable to someone that's a gallery owner.
You got it. There is a proofing process.
We've done many discussions on proofing and soft proofing.
Yeah, yeah.
People can go dig and find it. It's good
stuff. They can find it on your site.
Yeah, they can find it on your site too. What genres of photography do you think are represented of photographs that sell well? Is it landscape, still life, nudes? What's going to sell at a gallery? I mean, you do, I think, landscape stuff. You've done all kinds of photography. But what have you seen with dealing with these people that is a sellable item or something that's palatable that you think that a gallery would like to sell or someone would even like to buy off your website?
Well, I hang around with a lot of different types of artists. And so after dinner, we have these conversations. Jerry Ulsman years ago kind of nudged me at one of these conferences and he whispered over, he said, "Do you ever notice how when lawyers get together, they talk about art? But when artists get together, they talk about business." Very funny. So having heard not just my own experience, but having heard other people's experiences, it seems to be that celebrity trumps all. It'll command a high price and move very quickly. There is a broad demand for landscape. I would say that nudes might attract a little more attention, but depending on the type of nude and how it's presented, that might bleed over into another niche, erotica. And fine art and erotica don't always blend. They can sometimes, but you start to see a graying of situations. And it's the same with flowers. Flowers would command an even greater or wider audience because it often gets into things that are more decorative. But trying to define what ends up being up in a high-end, upper-scale fine art venue and what goes out into a more populist venue is often very challenging in that genre. But there's wide appeal for that material. It's so readily accessible and enjoyable. So a lot of different subjects out there that are approachable, but there is kind of a scale of mass appeal, so to speak.
So celebrities being number one, so if you can get good pap shots, or if you're doing some kind of celebrity portrait work, that's probably going to sell best because people are just drawn to that more.
Yeah, let's go celebrity floral nude landscape. You might have other issues that are more socially relevant or kind of off the scale. There's some interest in it, but it's harder to sell. Portraits of anonymous people. Harder to sell because people don't tend to have the same kind of relationship, but it does happen. Jock Sturges does very well, so I guess probably that would fit more into the nude section. My feeling is you should do high-quality content and find a way to market what you really like to do. While there are these broad categories that people are interested in and have proven to do well, you might do equally well or even better in something that isn't pre-existing by doing something that's novel and something that really stands out from the crowd, as long as you market it well and you're represented well. Do good work.
Yeah, exactly. The bottom line is you need to have really high-quality stuff. The best thing to know is to learn your craft.
Or at best, it might be very popular for a very short time.
Well, I guess if it's popular long enough that someone will buy it, then maybe it's as popular as it needs to be. I don't know. Multiple ways to look at that. So what about photographers and getting involved and establishing relationship with galleries? Is that a best thing to do? Or is it try to find the guy up the street in your own city that's got a gallery and try to convince him to do stuff? What do you say when it comes to creating relationships with these people that actually display and sell artwork? Or are you better off just going to rent your own gallery?
Well, I love the fact that you're highlighting the notion of a relationship, because that's what it primarily is. And given that, it depends on the artist and their abilities to market themselves, and that's often very challenging, and many people don't have those skills. Even that being said, if you don't have reliable, high-quality representation, that relationship may be a waste of time or even turn into something that you later regret. There are dealers out there that don't do things as well or use reputable practices as they should, and there's some really great dealers. There's a lot of demand for representation. Many people are doing artwork and would love to show their work and make a little bit of money through it. It really helps if the artist understands what it takes to adopt professional business practices in this field and to represent themselves, or at least what it goes into representing them, and work well with reliable representatives. And that's a challenge. You've got to find the right reps, and you've got to educate yourself. In terms of educating yourself, there's one source in the industry that just stands out head and shoulders above the other, and that's Mary Virginia Swanson. She does great seminars, great workshops, and she has a fantastic blog that shares a lot of information about marketing fine artwork. And it couldn't be more highly recommended that you familiarize yourself with her content and that kind of information before you get into this and know what professional practices are. Also have realistic expectations about what your representatives are able to do and take a very active hand. Get involved. Stay in touch with your representatives. Provide them high-quality material, not just in terms of the prints, but also in terms of marketing materials like artist statements or any number of other things that you can do to help manage the career. I think it's important to understand that you ultimately have to manage your career and that over time, you will more than likely be dealing with multiple representatives. Some representatives will come and go. So be realistic about your expectations there.
Now, when you reference to representation, are you talking about hiring a photography rep? Are you looking at a publicist? Or what's in JP's mind when you say representation?
Depends on the type of photography that you're doing. But if we're speaking specifically about fine art, most representatives are gallery dealers. Now, there are some reps who go out to specific niches like corporate art or hotels, and they don't have a physical space, but they have a network of art buyers that they then contact. And more dealers are dealing exclusively with a small niche of photography collectors who are interested in certain type of work, and they're contacted directly. And they're not going through the expense of mounting shows and supporting rent and storing inventory. So for fine art, there are a couple of ways that you can go. It's hard to find a publicist or an agent for fine artists. There generally isn't that much money, and I don't think there are many people who actually go ahead and become an agent like they do for commercial photography. Or if you're working out on assignment, now you've got this whole niche of agents who will promote an artist's career and contact the corporations or the ad agencies who are making the assignments. So, again, it depends on the type of photography, but with respect to fine art, generally you're talking about gallery dealers.
Sure, and like you said, if you want a publicist that's going to do PR work and publicity work for a said artist, people don't know that it costs a lot of money to have a full-time publicist promoting yourself and your work.
It does. And think about your edition structure and your pricing to see that it can support not only you, but also your representative.
Maybe that's something that people that are getting into it or established and have good work, they just have to, I guess, bear down at one point and say, well, for 6 months or a year, I'm going to drop the 10 or 15, 20 grand. and hire myself a good publicist and just give it a go. And it takes a while to build your name. And like you said, it's a relationship. You can't just expect to walk in off the street unless you have some photos that are like really in demand or something that's like a newsworthy type thing and say, wait, here's my stuff. It's great. Just put me all over the walls.
Exactly. It rarely happens overnight. It usually takes quite a number of years.
Let's talk about pricing work. You're a new photographer. You're into the new fine art world. You've made some beautiful 13 by 19 or 11 by 14 or whatever. They could even be an analog print. You have some nice fine art. How do you figure out what to sell the stuff for? Is it 20 bucks, $4,000? I mean, what do you do?
Sure. Take 20 bucks off the table because you can't cover your materials for that, much less your time, your overhead. And now think about splitting what you sell with a representative. Is it worth their time to take 50% of a smaller ticket item? With that in mind, if you're dealing with representation, I think it's very hard to sustain the interest of representatives for anything less than $500. And it's very hard to justify your investment in time. Those are entry levels. You might get away with something a little bit lower for a shorter amount of time, possibly if you're selling directly. There are artists who go out there and deal with these print shows where they load up their van, they take their prints and set up a stand at these outdoor festivals. Tends to be lower ticket items in the $200 to $300 range, but you're selling directly. That's a possibility, but it's very hard to grow long-term out of that. So very often, if you're interested in the fine art niche and want to deal with galleries, you're better off thinking about a different edition structure with a higher price. Now, a lot of people are confused, rightly so, about print pricing and edition structures because practices in the industry vary so widely. Having looked at it for the better part of my life and very intensely for over two decades, I've seen constant change. The preference for edition structures changes at least every 10 years, if not every five. The progression from the 1970s till today, the general trend has been towards smaller editions at larger scales with higher price tags. That's led to a situation where now today we have contemporary artists, Kursky and Richard Prince, selling images that are very large scale, very limited edition, one or two, in the millions, $3 million to be specific. That's historic.
For a photograph, I mean, that's unheard of. It's crazy.
Right. I mean, it's a huge photograph, and there's only one or two of them, but this is actually happening, which is completely different. You know, in the 50s, my dad and Ansel Adams were having coffee and exclaiming very excitedly that they got $50 for a photograph in the Museum of Modern Art. Things have really changed in the last 50, 60 years. Unfortunately, it's very hard to say that it has changed a specific way, because there are still people selling photographs in unlimited editions for anywhere from $100 to $5,000. Without respect to limiting. And the general trend, I'd say if I were going to say that there was one edition structure that's in vogue right now, it's an edition in the range of 12 prints escalating, starting at the 3,000 range, generally in the 20 by 24 size. That's just roughly because the old edition structures still stand, and I mentioned Kursky and Prince, which is even smaller than that. And if you went back 15 years, you might be looking at some people like Michael Kenner or Keith Carter were doing editions of 50, starting in the $1,000 range. So things change at least every 10 years, probably every five. There is such a diversity of pricing, edition structure, and to some degree niches within the market that it's very hard to sort all that out. I would say one thing, expect it to change again. I've outlined the general trend, but there's still plenty of people selling work in open editions.
What's your thoughts on, let's say you're a film photographer and you shoot a beautiful image, medium format, large, 35, whatever. And you say, okay, here is one print. And at the bottom of the mat, here's the negative, and this is it, brother. One piece. It's like art. So you think of this being a piece of art, like if you were a painter. You're not going to sit there and paint 100 of the same paintings, right?
Right.
You're going to do one. Here's my art. Have you seen people going this way, that maybe that's a way to go to really establish yourself as being a true artist, and here is the one capture, this is it. You get the negative and everything.
I'm laughing only because, hey, that's a way to be a true artist. This has nothing to do with the content.
Right.
This has everything to do with marketing and the delivery.
Right.
So you could do really high-quality content that's going to change the course of art history. Look at Ansel Adams. He never limited his editions.
And his stuff's gold.
Limiting an edition is a choice of an artist that does a number of things. It quickly escalates price. It may restrict the amount of time that they spend with a given image. Ansel and many other photographers who deal with an open edition end up spending a great deal of their career printing the same image over and over again when they might be interested in printing new work. If you're a prolific artist, the fact that you generate new work creates more pieces to sell, and by limiting, you may deflect attention from the older work to the newer work as the older work becomes either higher priced or no longer available. So it can work to the artist's benefit that way. The other benefit to the artist is that on the secondary market, prices for the older work will escalate. But the artist sees none of that. And if my father's generation had limited back in the 50s at those prices of $50 or $100, they would have had quite a challenge getting through their career as the market changed. And again, it will change again. So limiting your edition changes its marketability, the niche that it's marketed to, but it also changes the relationship the artist establishes with their own work and secondarily with the public. And while it's not a one-size-fits-all, you should make this decision world, you should think long and hard about whether that's the relationship you want to have with both your work and the public. And when in doubt, think twice about limiting, because once you limit, you don't want to unlimit the same work. You've basically entered into an agreement with your clients, the people who purchase your work, that you will honor that system that you sold them the work under. You could change the edition structure of future work, but if you go back and unlimit something that you sold as limited, it's basically illegal, and it's a really fast way to undercut your credibility.
Sure, and I guess another thing, too, is if you shoot a frame of a landscape, what do you consider limited if you move the camera over 10 degrees or take a shot that's very similar? It's not really cool to do that then either, probably. You're better off making something very unique if you're going to make it limited.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of ways that you could game the system. Produce another print size that's half an inch larger or go out to another medium. And I think basically you have to use common sense. Don't do it simply because you want to continue making money on that image, but because you think that it substantially enhances or enriches the experience of the image and it really constitutes a new viewing experience. Go make new work instead of trying to game the system.
That's true. What's your thoughts on you're selling your work? And I know that you are very picky when it comes to presentation with your kit that you show. You even include gloves and stuff. What's your thoughts on the photographer doing his own mounting, matting, framing, all this kind of stuff? Is this something best left up to a gallery? But it seems like they're really going to dig into it. Are you better off doing this self so you have complete artistic control over the whole process? What's your thoughts?
Again, it's completely optional and it depends on the individual. If you're not very good about that stuff or you don't have the space to dedicate to doing it right or don't want to make the investment in the equipment, it's better left to professionals. I've, over the years, done it myself. And then later, just because of my time has become in so much demand, I farmed it out to people that I can trust to do it right. Not all galleries will handle it. Some galleries like to handle it. And it really is a matter of whether that syncs up well, the cost, whether that makes sense for you to deal with a gallery or whether to deal with your own framer, whether to supply it framed or unframed to the gallery. Again, it's that relationship. And it does have a lot to do with the individual artist. I mean, if an individual artist is working out of a tiny little apartment in a major metropolitan area, doesn't really have the space to set it up, it would make sense to send it out to somebody who can do it for them and do it well.
Exactly, and I guess that's the thing. And it's back to the whole deal of, are you better to have stuff hanging in a gallery? I guess it brings you recognition, or are you better off doing your own publicity work to say that you're the great artist and people want to buy your stuff because it's all perception and what you've done with marketing? I guess it works into the whole thing. I know typically, and I know from looking at some work that you've done, I've looked at work from Steven Johnson and some other great photographers, is they don't dry mount anymore. Do people even do this anymore? Do people want dry mount images on some gator board? I mean, or is that just like you don't even do that?
I think with inkjet, there's a tendency to do it less and less. But there are plenty of people who are still doing it, and it was well accepted, particularly within the silver gelatin medium. So it's still accepted today, and it's still considered an archival practice. I prefer not to do it simply because I like my print to be separate from the presentation materials, and if there's ever any conservation issue, the mat, other kinds of materials like that can easily be replaced without affecting the original artwork. My dad still dry mounts all his silver gelatin, and I've heard of many people still dry mounting inkjet. Some kind of laminate tends to become more desirable as you get into larger print scales. Some kind of dry mounting, or even there's some spray adhesives, can help keep the stuff flat, where if it's just hinged or hung, it may flex and swell and become an issue later at larger scale. So there are a lot of options out there that are archival, from the tissue that you were talking about I prefer to hinge and pack it tight, but there are also some archival laminates as well.
Back to bringing yourself to the level that a gallery would even want to look at your beautiful photography, do you think that these gallery people pay attention to photo contests, shows, if you enter your stuff in a PPA show, if you enter it in WPPI? I mean, if you win these portrait contests, does it really matter? Do photo contests mean anything to anybody outside of the photographic community that's like, hey, great job, buddy, beautiful, you won, right on, cool? Or is it just all smoke and mirrors and it doesn't really matter in the real world?
No, I think they actually do matter, particularly in the early stages when you're just starting out. The fact that somebody has expressed confidence in your work, and if many people have expressed confidence in your work many times, it helps. There's also a kind of progression from more mass media contests to things that are a little bit more rarefied, or to who the juror is. Many times if people are concerned about that, or if it really matters, the fact that a specific curator from the museum was the juror for the show adds even greater value. It's just like when you're moving from exhibition. A lot of times you move local, out to regional, to national, and finally to international. There is a kind of a progression of growth and expansion that indicates a track record, and people like to see that you're active and that you've consistently adopted professional practices throughout that. So it does make a difference. The bottom line, though, is with really high-quality work and a professional set of practices, including your marketing strategy, you could probably leapfrog many of those steps if you found the right representative, had the right work, represented the work in the right way, you could probably get to a higher level of success more quickly.
So I guess it's like, okay, I'm going to send off and enter 100 photographs this year in competitions and spend 10 grand by the time I print, mail, and do all this kind of cool guy stuff. Or I can just give the money to a PR firm and have someone tout me as the next thing better than sliced bread, and I might get more traction off the marketing PR stuff than I would by entering a contest.
You might. They'd want to see that that PR firm was really doing their job and really worth their salt and knew what they were doing. Very few artists actually hire publicists like that. But I have heard of some people doing it. In one or two cases, it has generated significant success. But you first got to have marketable product.
You got to have the chops and you got to have the stuff. I mean, you can tell you walk through a mall at one of the shops in Vegas and boom, here's this gallery. This guy's got some crazy prints and everything. But it's like, I've never heard of this guy. But is it all that he has a palatable product? He's got something printed on some Fuji Trans material and it's just like backlit, or it's just like, wow. And it's a cool image and it's super saturated, and I guess that's what people want to see as in a retail environment. But this guy's selling these things for $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a pop, and he's got five stores across the U.S. He must be doing something right.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. And model, it's relatively recent and is beginning to be adopted by more people. You'd have to correlate that with collection into larger institutions, both nationally and internationally. That might not correlate, and that might not be your goals. That might be highly successful. You'd probably take a more active hand in all of that and be hitting a different niche. Part of what really makes any of this work, and particularly that, is you've got to be ready for satisfying demand. Got to have your supply chain well-oiled. If you start stacking up a whole bunch of prints and you can't satisfy, or it takes you a couple of years to satisfy print orders, you're going to have lower customer satisfaction. Your representative is going to get frustrated. You got to be ready to deliver, not just have good content in the box, but also be able to supply good product in a timely fashion.
Or like if I call up John Paul Cabernegro Studios and I want to order a print from you, how long am I going to wait?
Less than 2 weeks.
Right, and I'm going to get whatever I want. A 40 by 50 off an 11880 is some crazy print, and you're going to make it and bang, it's in the deal. Thanks for the cash, brother. Boom.
You're going to be able to pay with credit card at any time during business hours. You're going to be able to my studio manager. It's going to be professionally packaged and professionally shipped, so you're not going to get a damaged product, and it's going to come with a return guarantee. It's like good customer service from any business. There is a business aspect to this, and in the long run, if you've got really great content, but your business practices, both marketing and supply, aren't also well done, it's going to hurt your overall career.
And I guess you could also, too, just open your own gallery. I mean, if you say, I have a gallery in San Francisco, well, guess what? You must be a guru if there's a whole gallery with only your own stuff in it. I guess it's back to that model like we've seen in Vegas.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes that can work well for an artist, and sometimes it's just vanity. There's more to a gallery than just opening up the space and hoping that people will come in. You got to do the marketing, get people to come in, and you've got to create sustained sales. But there are many people who have run their own galleries successfully, not just in major metropolitan areas, but in more touristed areas, and done well over time by doing that. So you can have your own gallery, you can work with another gallery. You could have no galleries and represent your work directly to some other niche, be it hotel, corporate, private collectors. I've got a friend who deals with no galleries and goes on the road once a year and deals with select individuals that buy his work consistently. So there are a number of different models for doing this, and I think it helps to become aware of the possibilities, be clear about what your talents and resources are, and adopt practices that will line up with your mission, how you want to relate to your work, and what aspects you want to become involved in. No matter what you do, though, you've got to be educated, and you've got to take an active hand in what it takes to run the business of fine art. It's not just about generating high-quality work. It starts there, but it doesn't end there. It's rare that an artist can simply produce good work and the perfect rep, the perfect pricing structure, the perfect supply that makes it easy for the artist will just fall into their lap. It's shaped, and the key thing is shape it in a way that supports the lifestyle that you're interested in, that suits your talents and your resources and opportunities.
I've seen your portfolio. It's in a beautiful container. It's separated with tissue between the prints. When you're doing a portfolio like that and you want to go show your work to gallery people and whoever it might be, because like you said, I might rather have a gig with Hilton. I'm going to sell a lot more prints than some guy out the street maybe. So no matter who you're showing this to, how many prints do you typically see in portfolios? Because I know as part of your class that you teach is you like to do portfolio reviews in the evening or whatever, and people like to show off their stuff and get critique back on what they're doing. What do you think about prints and how many should be in the portfolio and how big these things should be? 8x10? What do you think?
Good question. Number one, you've already highlighted that the presentation should be professional. It should look like $1 million, or it should look like you took a lot of care and did it very professionally. It could be conservative, or it could be very innovative, but it needs to make an impression. When people pick up the box, when they open it up, it needs to say, I'm professional and I respect my work. You should too. After that, your job is to show people your very best work. A lot of people make the mistake of trying to show them everything. Show them too diverse a range of subjects so it seems like you don't have a focus. Or show them too many prints and the images that aren't as strong end up weakening the stronger images. Show only your best work. Let's say that you're lucky enough to have done a really professional presentation and you've got a lot of really great work. Then you really have to think about the fatigue that might set in from showing people too many images. I tend to think 12 is a great number. If you've really got fantastic work, you might think about 24. In terms of size, you should think about the ergonomics of actually handling prints. If you've got big 30 by 40 prints that you have to wheel in on a dolly, it's going to be hard to show those prints. You're going to have to get involved in the print presentation and really do it up. Whereas if you don't have that luxury of meeting firsthand, face-to-face with the people you're showing your prints to, probably better off to keep it into the 20-24 range or under, making it an appropriate size, but making it manageable so it'll fit on a desk. If the box and the prints don't fit anywhere in the office where the person's going to be reviewing it, it's just going to be hard to get at. People are going to be struggling with the presentation more than looking at the work. But whenever you can, see if you can't get somebody, either you or your representative, to show up and increase that relationship with the people who are seeing your work.
No, great, great information. And I think a couple things here before we jam today is, what do you think about making fine art prints but then still selling the images as stock artwork?
Absolutely fine. It used to be stigmatized 50 years ago because there seemed to be this perceived difference between commercial and fine art. A lot of people blurred that distinction. People overlooked the fact that Ansel Adams did commercial work throughout most of his career. Irving Penn certainly shatters that barrier. So people do both, and there are plenty of times where fine artists are licensing their work for a commercial application. You might want to consider how those images are being used. If it's used in an inappropriate way that erodes your brand or gets people to perceive your work in a way that's not helpful to the way they perceive your fine art, then you may want to think twice about that. So have some control over how the images are used. Certainly, don't let your representatives or your clients who buy your fine art think that they are purchasing the intellectual property rights to those images. Those are separate. You may sell that one unique limited edition print, but that doesn't mean that the person who bought that print has the reproduction rights. That's a whole separate issue, and they would have to purchase those separately. You have the ability to reproduce your work in books or any other commercial endeavor that you would want, as long as it's not in a similar fine art context. It's a totally separate thing.
So it's cool to do my one-off print. I'm going to take one photograph. This is the one print. There's only one of it in the world. but you're not getting my negative. You can hang the print on the wall. You're the only cat that's got one, except an artist can have an artist proof. That's still cool, but I can still put this image in a book or whatever I want to do, silkscreen on a t-shirt, but you got the only print.
Sell it for an ad in a billboard or any number of other things. You can still do that. If somebody wants that, then you could negotiate that. Right? Let's say a collector says, I don't want you ever reproducing this in any other context. Well, then the collector should be willing to compensate for that.
Cash is king.
It's all negotiable, right? You're selling your rights.
It's all green, so brother, yeah.
You've got the physical object and you've got the intellectual property rights. They're two totally different things, and depending on the usage, they're worth different things, but there's still value there. Just because you bought the print doesn't mean you get the intellectual property rights. Negotiate that separately.
Great, great stuff. So one more time here, John Paul, tell me your website, the classes coming up, the Acme educational stuff. There's a vast amount of knowledge that you're offering at extremely economical pricing. What's the DVDs, $50, $70 a set or something?
Yeah, I think the DVDs are like $60 a piece.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even a couple ink cartridges in anybody's printer. So really, I mean, I think you're going to learn from color management, and people that are shooting analog can output in digital, do this hybrid workflow. And if you're shooting digital too, it doesn't matter, because like we've discussed, once it's in the computer, it's a digital image.
There's digital technology involved in the process, so it helps to know how that technology works to get the very best results.
There's not many guys left that are shining light through their negatives.
My dad is one.
Your dad's one of them. And that's a whole different genre, okay? But I think anybody anymore, and I mean, I know a lot of professional photographers that are shooting film for capture because their lab can process it, scan it, give them a file. They can give it to a client for like a wedding photographer.
Sure.
They have a unique analog look, a unique saturation, and they don't want to spend the time in Photoshop. So there's a lot of great reasons to do everything. I mean, it's still photography. It's great stuff. But really, no matter what anybody wants to kick and scream, we're in a digital age. And even if you take your stuff down to get printed at the photo lab, guess what? It's digital, because they're going to scan it, and it's going to get puked out on a machine that's going to do it digital. Even though it's a C print and it's still a traditional photographic process, there's a digital intermediary there. So we're in a digital world, and we have to deal with it.
It's true, and I would say take advantage of that, because it's helping propel higher quality, better results, faster than anything else before. I was talking to Sal Lopes, who's a well-known platinum printer, and he's using Epson inkjet printers on transparent media to make contact negatives for his platinum prints. And he agreed when I said, today, as a result of digital technology, more historic process prints are being made than ever before. And in many cases, they're of higher quality than analog historic process prints. Today, some of the finest platinum prints ever made are being made now with the aid of digital technology.
Oh, I mean, you're right. I mean, you can make, no matter how you capture, once the stuff's in Photoshop, you can turn it into a negative. You can use an Epson that works beautiful to do this stuff. If you can print it out on, Mitsubishi has some very cool film. You can print this stuff, and you can make contact prints. So you can be hardcore analog boy, but still have the quality control. You can set your curve levels for your negatives. I mean, you can make, like you said, these platinum prints that people are turning out now are unbelievable stuff.
All kinds of options today. And ultimately, the content of your work is determined by the choices you make.
Yes, it's cool stuff. So, again, your website, the training, color management, everything you're doing, your studio, people can come up and see you. You have classes there. You guys can hang out and drink coffee and talk about prints and learn stuff. Where do we get all this information at?
All you have to do is go to johnpaulcaponegro.com. Maybe it'll help to spell it. C-A-P-O-N-I-G-R-O.
Yeah, this is great stuff. And, John Paul, I really appreciate you joining us today to take time to explain some of these things that typically you don't get to read about. They're not in books. And you have such a vast experience. It's great to enlighten our listeners on what you're up to. We definitely look forward, of course. You join us again here on the program. There's lots of other interviews that we've done over the years. It's available on my website. And I think it's all linked on your deal. Just go to your website and you can find it all. And we have talked about digital proofing and all kinds of stuff. So,
sure. Thanks for having me again. It's been a real pleasure. It's always a pleasure to show up here.
Yep. And I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much, John Paul.
Take care.
Well, there you go. John Paul Caponegro. A lot of great information. Nobody knows more about this topic than John Paul Caponegro. Of course, being a master of the digital print. A lot of great stuff going on with John Paul. Definitely check out his website, his training. You can learn a lot about what's going on. And like we said, no matter how much we want, and we love to make black and white prints in the darkroom, color prints, Cibachromes, dye transfer, no matter what you're into, a lot of people anymore, even if you take your film to the lab, it's scanned. And it comes into a digital realm, and you need to learn how to deal with this kind of stuff. These are great topics to talk about. And of course, we love analog capture. There's no better. Check it out, www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. Over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 for black and white chrome that is stunning. DR5.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios, the place for high resolution scans using their Aztec Premier with a 3-micron engine with resolution to 8,000 ppi. Definitely check them out over at www.igerstudios. That's eigerstudios.com. Good old Al at Upstrap, upstrap-pro.com. And our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things traditional photographic process, black and white, color, wet plate, you name it, it's all going on over at apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group. Definitely want to check them out. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.